Welcome to episode 55 of Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I'm Greg Weeks. I'm a political scientist at UNC Charlotte. And my guest today is Fred Batista, who is assistant professor of political science, also here at UNC Charlotte. His research focuses on comparative politics, political psychology, and methods. He's done a lot of work on Brazilian politics, especially with regard to female candidates for office. And we'll be talking about the Brazilian presidential election coming up on October 7th. So, Fred, thank you so much for taking this time.
Thank you for having me, Greg.
Let me start with a question that I always ask everyone, and that is, what got you interested in studying politics?
It was actually something directly related to what we're talking about today. It was the 2002 presidential elections in Brazil. I was in my last year in high school, and it was a big event. It was one of those critical junctures, I think, since democratization in the country, where the left won for the first time. And everyone got really involved, especially younger people. I decided to go to college and take, you know, social sciences as my major. Mm-hmm. And then 4 years later, there was the 2006 election, and Lula tried to get reelected when he was reelected. And that's when the voting patterns in the country completely shift, where the poor from the Northeast were all voting for Lula. Because before, Lula won by the same margin, a similar margin everywhere. But in 2006, everything changed. The country was more like split in terms of regions and income, socioeconomic status. So I was fascinated by that. I decided to focus on politics and how people vote to try to understand what happened. That's how I got where I am.
As you were saying, actually, right before we started, was that this Brazilian presidential race is almost making U.S. politics look boring. So what we have is this really crowded field. And the most recent poll, and then and I'll say too, is that you then gave me another poll, which was quite similar, which was Bolsonaro at about 28%, Haddad at about between, let's say, 18 and 19%, Gomes at up more or less 11%, and then you kind of go down from there. You correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're thinking that it would be the top two would most likely go to a runoff unless things change, you tell me if that's wrong, but where will Lula supporters go? Would they go to Haddad or would they stay home? What will they do?
That's the million-dollar question in this election. It was more so before Haddad entered the race. Now what we're seeing, because I think the overarching question is if we're going to have normal or critical elections. Normal elections would be with Alckmin from the Social Democrats, PSDB, and the Workers' Party.
Right. I didn't even mention him. He's in single digits.
He's in fourth with 7%. So that was the scenario in the last six elections. And right now they have the biggest coalitions and they have more time on TV. So the question before was, are we going to get there? And when, you know, before Haddad was announced as the candidate a week ago, they were like fourth and fifth in the race. Then like, over the last 10 days, things started to change, but not in the way that Alckmin would like to, because Bolsonaro hasn't gone down in the polls. He stayed there.
Right.
But Haddad is picking up the votes. I think it's been slow because Lula had 40% of the vote.
Right.
There was a chance that he was going to win in the first round.
Right.
So it's happening since he jumped from like in 10 days or so, 8% to 19, but that's still half of the vote. It's going to be enough for him to get to the second round. So they are tied in the second round. In the simulations, they are tied with 40% each. So it looks like he will get those votes. Haddad will get those Lula votes. But this transfer of votes has been less successful than it was in 2010 when Lula pointed his finger to Dilma and told everyone to vote for her.
Yeah. I just wonder whether when push comes to shove that Lula supporters will say, I just want to make sure Bolsonaro doesn't become president. And I don't know whether that was true. And that wasn't really true in the U.S. A lot of people in the U.S. thought Trump might not win, so they didn't vote.
Yeah, and that's a complicated calculus with the other options, because it doesn't necessarily mean that Haddad is the more likely candidate to beat Bolsonaro in the runoff. You could have a centrist candidate like Gomes or Marina. That's not what it looks like right now. I think only Gomes beats him in the second round. But they're not actually making that calculus. You actually have allegiance. What's happening there, I think it's allegiance to the Workers' Party.
Okay.
We don't know yet. I think the right answer is we don't know yet what's driving people to vote in the runoff. What I say is that the transfer of votes from Lula to Haddad, which is like not happening automatically, that's expected.
Yeah.
Because so basically Lula is not participating in the campaign. The Workers' Party is no longer in government, basically controlling resources. And the Workers' Party is not in a coalition with a PMDB with a big centrist party that has a lot of roots all over the country. So the chances of winning an election with them are higher.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not there. They're on their own. So you don't have their party brokers. And the Bolsa Família effects are diminishing over time, right? Because people are realizing that the Bolsa Família was very crucial before. Now people are realizing that the program is still there, you know, even without the Workers' Party. So
right.
Everything that would makes people like Lula based because of what he was, you know, how he did as a president, I don't think it grants automatically
right.
the vote. Because people are actually, there is some sense of gratitude to Lula and the memory of his success as a president, but not, that doesn't go automatically to whoever comes
exactly.
next. Yeah.
Now, coming back to Bolsonaro, what effect does his stabbing, does that attack seem to have on his support? Has it created sympathy or no effect?
It's hard to tell. What we see is an increase in his numbers, probably from 4 to 8 points, depending on the poll. I think the latest one that came out yesterday showed a bump in like 8 points. But it's hard to say because that was not the only thing that happened.
Sure.
You had the sympathy voting make it go up, but you also have the fact that in the meantime, they basically announced Haddad as the candidate. So now you actually have, you might have more strategic voting on the right side of the spectrum by basically going for the strongest candidate, the one that is ahead, to kind of guarantee that he's going to be there and that's Bolsonaro as
right.
this kind of alternative to the Workers' Party. And you also have the fact that he's in the hospital, not doing grassroots campaigns, not out there, not participating in debates. My goal, you know, I don't know. It's hard to know, but my play against him, in a way, the mainstream knowledge we have on that is that you know, that usually helps, and he's not out there. And you also have a recent, like, social media thing where there was a Facebook group with 2 million women.
I heard about this.
With the hashtag, not him, ele não. And that's big. That's generating support. So that also, I think, may have had an impact against him. So with all those things balancing each other out, it may be surprising that he had a bump this big. But it's just hard to know how much of that was the sympathy for him based on the event, because that all happened at the same time, in the same interval.
Right.
So very hard to tell.
And it's interesting, too, because I had heard something about how he doesn't actually like doing debates and doesn't actually like campaigning. So in a certain sense, being in the hospital for him means he doesn't have to do those things. And those things might make him look worse. Who knows? Because he says crazy things all the time.
Yes. He didn't do well in the first debate, especially when his opponents bring topics to him that he's not comfortable with. And that's the strategy. If you talk about
right.
economic policy, he's definitely not comfortable. That was very clearly going to become the strategy in the next debates, because he had a hard time answering questions on economic policy because he's not that knowledgeable. In a way, that could have helped him, because that kept him out of those, away from those questions. And they wouldn't be asking him questions about human rights or crime, because that's where he, you know, he shines in a way to his voters, to his electoral base.
My next question actually circles back a little bit to number two, but in thinking about a runoff, aside from the candidates themselves, like, what would determine the outcome of that runoff? Would there be certain issues? How do you think Brazilians would make that calculation when they're deciding who to vote for?
Things are so polarized now, and you see that in the options, in the two
sure.
more successful options, that is, to a great extent, that is about the candidates. And the problem there is that Bolsonaro has about 42% of rejection, and he's well known. Like, everybody knows him. And Haddad is at 29% of rejection. He's way below Bolsonaro. He's about 9 points below Bolsonaro in the polls. But he's less known and less rejected by the public. In the second round simulations, they both have 40%. So it looks like as Haddad gets more, you know, better known, he's going to have more support than rejection. And that might put him ahead. But I think in terms of issues, it's going to be Bolsonaro trying to play up the, you know, iron fist type, right?
Right.
On crime and on corruption. And Haddad is going to definitely use Lula and Lula's success as a president. And that's a major topic. The Workers' Party tenure and presidency, because Haddad is going to be trying to play up Lula's success with the economy. Bolsonaro's response is going to be focusing on what happened when Lula selected a not very experienced candidate, not very well-known candidate, what ended up happening, and that was Dilma, right? So
right.
there are going to be these two narratives about the Workers' Party legacy. Haddad is going to try to make it look like it's about Lula coming back, and they're going to try to make it about Dilma coming back.
Okay.
Those lead to very different things.
Okay. So does Haddad have an identity for Brazilians beyond just being Lula's choice?
I would say no. He was actually the Minister of Education, and he was very successful under Lula. That was under good times. So in 2012, he ran for mayor in São Paulo and won, but he could not be reelected. His job was very badly evaluated, and he lost. He had 15% of the vote. He ran against an inexperienced, like a entrepreneur candidate, new candidate. He didn't even go to the second round. So he's known in São Paulo, and I don't think people are aware of his work as the Minister of Education. He actually did a good job. He was very well evaluated, but that's
not a very high level position in terms of visibility.
No, he speaks well. He's an intellectual in a way. He has experience. He's knowledgeable. He can actually try to move things in his favor by being himself. And once he has the attention, trying to get a support, but he's not that kind of figure like Dilma wasn't. You right. have that kind of figure in the other three candidates that are going to be out of the picture. In Gomes, who was governor several times, was in Congress. Marina Silva was a senator. She had 20 million votes in the last election. And Geraldo yeah. Alckmin is the governor of São Paulo, been the mayor of São Paulo. So you have that kind of profile. And the three candidates that are not as hated, but not as loved at the same time, you have that in them. Not in Bolsonaro or Haddad. Actually, I think the result of this polarization and this process that has led Brazil.
Okay. And Haddad, are his rejections or his negatives largely his ties to Lula?
I think so, yes.
Rather than him, it's just like, well, you're Lula's choice, so I reject you.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, he's in the left. There's a rejection towards the Workers' Party and the left, yeah. And his rejection is kind of similar to Ciro Gomes, who has a very similar, in terms of ideology, has a very similar stance. So I think it's based on that. They're both seen as the same type of candidate.
Right. Now, one thing that I don't typically read very much about is that there will also be legislative elections. And I haven't really read to see what kinds of outcomes we should expect. But how difficult do you think it's going to be for whoever is elected to work effectively with the legislature?
Very difficult. So Brazilian Congress is very fragmented, like one of the most fragmented in the world, and has become more fragmented recently. Over time, it's becoming more fragmented, more parties. And one evidence of that is the number of candidacies this time, 13. You don't just have fragmentation, but now you had incentives for everyone to have fewer coalitions, you know?
Yeah.
And there's no evidence that it's going to become less fragmented. The next legislature is not going to become less fragmented than it is. And there are estimates that suggest that the winner, the party that wins the most seats, are not going to have more than 15% of the vote. Which, and you, in combination with that, you have the fact that the elected president at this point will not win by a large margin at all to try to have widespread legitimacy. They're
right.
tied at 40% for a second round. So I'm guessing whoever wins by just a small margin. It's going to be able to use massive electoral support from the people to try to force the legislature to work a certain way. If Haddad wins, we're going to be in a very similar scenario to Dilma, what we have with Dilma, unless he's very skillful to rebuild things. And if Bolsonaro might actually have a better chance if he's able to build a large right-wing coalition, an anti-Workers' Party coalition in the runoff. But Bolsonaro is quite unpredictable. His character, his persona is not. He generates a kind of embarrassing in people more in the center
yeah.
right. So I think it's going to be very hard for Haddad due to like he's got baggage, right? He's
yeah.
got baggage.
Yeah.
And for Bolsonaro because of his character, his centralizing figure.
Would you say that for a lot of the legislature, economic policy is really central now? Wouldn't you say so? Because I felt like with Dilma, the one problem was that the economy started to fall apart and she got blamed. Already you have a precedent for the left to be impeached if things are looking bad. And then with Bolsonaro, like, does he have, what kind of a economic platform does he have? Is he cut taxes or does he even articulate that?
His main economic advisor is more like a right-wing, you know,
okay.
economic policy guy. And Bolsonaro doesn't actually answer questions. He never answers questions about economic policy. He usually refers to his team and to his advisors. So we should expect Bolsonaro to have in economic policy a more of a liberalizing effect
yeah.
on that.
Yeah.
That's going to be his platform. And that's where he can actually gather support. He can
comparing him to Trump. So that Trump, many people in Congress don't like Trump very much. But as long as Trump's economic policies are in line with their interests, they will vote for him.
That's Bolsonaro's chance, I think. But his character becomes a problem because he's actually a statista, like he's pro-state in some matters, right?
Yeah.
He's in some for some things, he's actually his rhetoric is actually a big state, iron fist. But in, when it comes to economic policy, that might become a tension. But I think he's going to actually, he's not going to talk about that too much. He's not going to be that person. I think he's going to leave it to his economic advisors. And they're going to make him look more, a feasible candidate and a feasible president that the parties in Congress can work with. His team is going to do that. And that's his chance, I think.
Look at polls, even at LAPOP or Latino Barometro or others. It really seems to show that Brazilians' confidence in democracy is weak. And of course, you have all this discussion, well, you have a vice presidential candidate who is a retired general, all this talk of coups. How much does that concern you for the future in Brazilian politics? Especially speaking as a Brazilian.
That concerns me a lot. And I think we're observing this in the election. Basically, we have the two leading candidates right now are the reflex of that and their rhetoric. They have the highest, the largest base of support, but they're also the most rejected.
Yeah.
That means we avoided the center and we were moving, at least in this sense, in terms of support, not necessarily ideology. I think Bolsonaro is way more to the right than the Workers' Party is to the left.
Yeah.
But in terms of how they're seen by the public opinion, they are the poles. They are the two extremes. They're going to make it to the second round, apparently. So I think that's a reflex of that. And you have the rhetoric. Let's just mention Bolsonaro's candidacy in and of itself. He's authoritarian. He speaks well of the country's military regime. He supports torture. He
very openly.
Very openly. He speaks against minorities. So that in and of itself is a threat. It's threatening to democracy in a way, his candidacy. And you also have the fact that he now, and he released a video from the hospital, I think a couple of days ago. And that's something he's done in the past. He just did it again, casting doubt to the validity of the electronic ballots in the country and the vote count, basically. So, which is something that, you know, the electoral court has spoke about, you know, there's no really major concern there. It's being checked and it's there's never evidence that there's any sort of like political use of it.
Right.
So basically, Bolsonaro seems to have on his side, his talking point when he loses, if he loses. He
already has, Trump did.
Yeah.
Trump did the same thing.
Yeah, to kind of delegitimize the process.
Right.
On the other side, the Workers' Party doesn't help that much as well. Because if you look at the whole rhetoric since things went down, since 2014, and then with the impeachment, there is this us versus them rhetoric. There is this, so that you have the economic elites and the media and the judiciary all plotting against the party. The democracy is completely rigged. And so you basically have that kind of rhetoric right. That doesn't actually bridge to the center, actually only isolates the party and wasn't able to, since rejection is still up, doesn't actually connect the party to more people. And you also have the fact that Lula is in jail. And the Workers' Party rhetoric at some point before Haddad was announced was that these elections couldn't be legitimate because Lula was not running. He should be running for them to be actual fair democratic elections. So there is also like this kind of excuse.
So they've undermined their own Haddad's position in this election.
Yes. And if he loses, that undermines the process among their supporters because, well—
right.
Lula was not there and should have run. So we were actually supposed to win.
Right.
And we didn't. So the whole, just by looking at what's happening right now, you can say that it's a reflex of a commitment to democracy going down, both among voters and among elites. And it's out, there are also signs that whatever happens, it's going to be taking that to a next level in a sense that we should pay attention to what the losers are going to say after this because they haven't. The rhetoric doesn't seem to be helping confidence in democracy that much.
So I'm always trying to, in these podcasts, talking about different angles of Latin American politics. They always tend to end on a pessimistic note. Is there any optimism we can inject into this presidential election or not?
Wow, that's...
I just put you on the spot. Maybe there's nothing. I don't know.
I'm not optimistic at all. So maybe there's going to be a lesson, wherever it ends, it's going to be a lesson to Brazil where... Let's just assume that, and I'm not, what I'm saying is not very different from what analysts are saying, especially, you know, with regard to the second, with this runoff with these two candidates. Say we get there and things, and we are able to survive 4 years, but not doing very well, you know, with like we did in the last 4 years, maybe Brazilians will stop looking to the polls and more maybe look to the center, to people who are trying to bridge, to establish connections and with a rhetoric that's more in terms, maybe even more vague in terms of uniting and actually people are going to have a better chance gathering support once they're in power, because that's going to be the problem. Once those folks win, what happens to the country? What happens to people, to the families that are splitting, you know,
right,
to the groups of friends that are not talking anymore? So maybe Brazilians are going to start looking in a different direction to try to actually look with better eyes to the options that actually can bring people together. That's not what it looks like right now, but maybe after Brazil makes a mistake, Brazil will be willing to correct it.
Okay, we're going to stop right there on this at least semi-optimistic note. Fred Batista is assistant professor of political science at UNC Charlotte. Fred, thank you so much again.